This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin hour number three. It is VSiN by the Books. I'm Dave Ross here in downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports, our closer back home in the confines of his house. Back in Cleveland, Ohio. Jensen, great to have you back. I know it's good for you as well. Always love catching up with our next guest. Colby Marcio does a great job as a betting analyst for Betting News. Give him a follow, as I do, at Colby M. Betts. Joins us now, and Jensen, you and I are looking at Colby's setup behind him. So we've got...
Love it.
We got Muhammad over the left shoulder, and is that Tebow over the right shoulder, Colby?
That is my Lord and Savior. Yes, it is.
So what got you to Tebow? What draw you to Tim?
Tebow is probably my favorite college football player ever, maybe one of my favorite athletes of all time. Not the religious stuff, just the stuff on the field. I really loved how he would die for a win. I think he's unhateable. I understand the media stuff does get out of hand, but in terms of player-wise and teammate-wise, a guy that will go out there and die on the field for you, I mean, that if that doesn't get you fired up, nothing will.
That's my kind of athlete too, Jensen, right? I like that where Colby's coming from here when it comes to Tim Tebow. We look for that. Jensen and I always say for our athletes, whether it's individuals, just get in the fight. Get in the fight. You knew you were in a fight. Especially if you're betting on Tebow, you knew he was going to give you everything he had. Major League Baseball today, do the fish fight enough for you coming off of a loss to the Rockies, Colby, to put your hard-earned dollar on them?
Oh, is it impressive the Rockies won last night? I think so, because anything they do to me is impressive, because it's just impressive how bad they are. But today I like the Marlins. I'm taking their team total bases over 12.5 at minus 120. The last 14 days, they have the 22nd best offense in baseball. The stats are across the board extremely average. I'm surprised, because 22nd is pretty impressive for me for the Marlins, because they're mediocre at best. They average 13 bases per game. That ranks 17th in baseball. Colorado is allowing 15 bases per game on the road. That's 28th. They're going up against Chase Dolander, excuse me, who I saw somebody had a jersey of his in one of the broadcasts. I would like to have a conversation with him. Why do you have a jersey unless that's your son? That's a little weird. This is his first game since May 18th. He has an ERA of 6.28 and a whip of 1.42. Allows 4.6 hits per game, 1.75 extra hits per game. Extra base six, excuse me, and has a poor average hitter matchup, Woba, ISO. 80% of his pitches are below league average. Miami has the second highest rated offense today on batters-box. Four elite rated hitters, one rated great, four above the league K rate, and five below, above the league ground ball rate. 12.5 just seems very doable against a rotation, a bullpen that makes everybody look good. It doesn't matter how bad you are. If the Colorado Rockies played the Colorado Rockies, we'd be like, wow, that's pretty good offense.
Colby, we get a rematch of the American League Championship Series tonight in the boogie down between the Guardians and the Yankees. And as I told Dave for Torpedo Bat Tuesday, there's a guy that absolutely loves the bright lights of Yankee Stadium, none other than our great friend Jose Ramirez. Last 15 days, just a 429 average, over 1,100 OPS. I'm on him for two hits, runs, RBI. I think you're in the same player prop idea, maybe in a little different area. But this guy just loves hitting, and he's got some pretty decent numbers against Carlos Rodon.
Yeah, I love his bases prop today. I sprinkled on the home run as well. He's killing lefties this season, and he's killing on the road. On the road versus lefties since 2023, he's batting 308 with a slugging percentage of 584 and an OPS of 944. And 36 elite ratings, according to batters-box, has 77% of records a hit 77% of the time. Two hits 33% of the time and goes over his bases prop 50% of the time. Now, Rodon has been very, very serviceable, actually really impressive this season in my eyes as a Yankee fan. As we all know, he has his moments, but I don't really care. I think this is a great spot for J-Ram. He kills every single one of the pitches in Rodon's arsenal, and Rodon has a poor average hitter matchup, ISO and ground ball percentage. I think this is a great spot for J-Ram tonight, even though Rodon has looked extremely good for a guy like him.
You know, Colby, I
was always due for some regression too.
Okay, looking for a little bit of that regression today in that matchup. I was in Chicago there for about 8 years, and I remember when Kyle Schwarber came up, and he was like the city's, you know, adopted son. They just absolutely love Schwarber there in Chicago. Now playing for the Phillies. When it's all said and done, before you get to your prop on him today, Will he go down as a Philly or a Cub? Is it almost sacrilegious to even ask the question?
I think if he wins a ring in Philly, I would say it's an even tougher discussion. But he's got a ring in Chicago. Chicago fans still wear his jerseys. They're always going to wear his jerseys. I'm old enough to remember when he was a catcher, so that dates me. But I loved him as a catcher. I was really high. I'm not even a Cubs fan. I loved him out the gate. I love him today for his bases prop. Actually, excuse me, his H to the double R. It's the only H to the double R I have on the day. That's why it threw me off. On the road this season, he's batting .288. He's been phenomenal, .1037 OPS. Has great trends on the road. Went an elite, 57 elite road rating. 65% of the time records a hit. 57% of the time over his H to the double R prop. 59% of the time goes over a run. We know he loves his walks. That's why I'm more leaning towards paying the price on the H to the double R than his bases. Going up against Bowden Francis, who has a poor rating today. Poor average hitter matchup, ISO and ground ball percentage. Love the ground ball percentage being bad because we want line drives. We don't want anything on the ground. He's 56% fastballs. That's his only pitch above league average. At home this season, has a 6.43 ERA, .288 opponent batting average, allows 5.27 hits, excuse me, and nearly two extra base hits per game. I think this is a phenomenal spot for Schwarber to possibly leave the yard, especially when he kills fastballs, and that's all Francis throws. I want to be on Schwarber no matter what today.
Yeah, the pride of Middletown High School, just north of where I did my high school in Southwest Ohio, the Middies. Also, you talk about guys who have other guys' jerseys. Joe Buck also has a Kyle Schwarber jersey.
Oh,
let's talk a little Boston Red Sox here. Dave and I have had a discussion about just the division of itself. I had picked the Red Sox to win the East. They have just looked lackluster at times. But Rafi Devers, at least with Bregman in there, started to just really take off after the dismal start. Now without him, picking a spot today to back him, what's your rationale of why you like him today?
Well, one, I want to say I hate betting on Rafi Devers. I hate it. I hate it so much that I have to continue doing it. I'm never on the right side. He betted 370 in May. I was never on the right side of him. I bet him the other day. I was not on the right side of him. It was in May. I have to be on him today. He doesn't have the best matchup, but also has a great matchup. He loves lefties, and he loves being at home. At home, .330 batting average, .633 slugging, .1073 OPS, and against lefties, .308 average, .449 slugging, .842 OPS. Does not have an elite rating on batter's side from box. Has it above average, which I don't think I've ever bet on anyone with an above average rating, but hits a home run 25% of the time. Kikuchi allows 40% hard contact, and Devers has too good of numbers against his arsenal for me to be like, well, you know, I don't really have the best success against Devers, so I'm going to stay away. I don't like having a ban list. Today it might happen. Ooh. Today he might be on the list. I don't like people that do that. I think it's a little weird. Today he might be on my ban list if he doesn't come through. So please, please go play first base. Please, please do something for your team. Do something for me. Do something, Devers, outside of batting .370 in the month of May. Yes, it's impressive, but it'd be more impressive if you helped me out over here. Please, I'm begging you.
Colby, I'll just say this. I have guys in golf betting I put in the no-fly zone all the time. It takes a lot to get off my no-fly zone. I just won't do it like Tommy Fleetwood. I want to ask you this question in the Centrals, okay? The Tigers have opened up a nice lead here, and they're almost a $3 betting favorite now at minus -295. To win that division. The Cubs have also opened up a little nice lead here, four games over St. Louis, five over the charging Brewers, who have won eight in a row here, but yet they're over a $2 betting favorite as well. If you had to back one of those big favorites, and again, this gets into who's going to do what at the trade deadline, like who's going to be buyer? Are they going to open up those checkbooks, if you will? Would you rather back the Cubs at that price point or the Tigers at theirs?
Ooh, I think the Tigers. I think somehow the Brewers come in and take the Central. They always do. I don't really have any reasoning behind it. They always sneak up and win it. And then they crumble in the playoffs. And it's like a pretty useless run they usually go on. But the Tigers, they're dangerous because there's nothing more dangerous than a team that's fun. And I don't think there's another team out there that's more fun right now than the Detroit Tigers. So whatever that price is, I would happily pay that over anybody else. So I think they're dangerous. Scuba looks untouchable. The offense looks fantastic. Kerry Bonds went yard again yesterday against the White Sox. And you get to play the White Sox a bunch. So you get a bunch of easy wins here and there. I love the Tigers. I really do.
All right, Colby, last one from me, and a big fan of Batters-Box, and I just happened to jump on because the world's most affordable yet least profitable, or at least least payout parlay, is the proverbial Judge Ohtani to hit a home run. Judge right now plus $1.70, Ohtani plus $1.85, and if we throw Schwarbs in there just for posterity, it's upwards of 26, 27 to 1. Pizza money?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Add Kyle Stowers in there, too. I was debating on adding his props today, but I went with the Marlins. I think he has a great matchup today against Chase. And you see, he's like 440 home run today. I think that's the best number I saw. I might add him now that I'm having this, saying this out loud. It was a really good matchup. It's probably the best matchup out of any Marlin today. So highly suggest Stowers if you want to add him onto your parlay.
Always intrigued when you start talking 26, 27 to 1. That's for sure. Colby, appreciate it as always, my friend. We'll catch up again soon.
Of course. Thank you, guys.
There he is. Give him a follow on X at Colby M Betts. If you have not done so yet, Edge Boost, it's the first ever bank account that's built solely for bettors. It ensures all of your gambling transactions are always approved. No usage fees, no minimums, earn cashback rewards, 100% approval for all betting deposits. Sign up today at edgeboost.bet. Use the promo code book, the title of this show, and deposit $25. Edge Boost is going to match that deposit. So that's edgeboost.bet. If you haven't done so, you got to do it today. Jensen, when we come back, it is time for News or Noise, the NFL edition. It's up next here at VSiN by the Books.
By the Books, right here on VSiN.
A lot of fun talking baseball with Colby Marcio in the last segment. JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel is going to join us in the next segment to talk NBA Finals and maybe some different angles and how you can get after this OKC and Indiana Final that will not begin until Thursday. So we've got a couple more days to get there before we get to the window. But Jensen, it's an NFL-themed edition of News or Noise.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. This is noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
Had I stayed in the Marine Corps, Jensen, I could have retired at a young age. Decided to get out. Frank Ragnow is getting out at a young age. 29 years young. For the former, now former Lions center, as he has officially retired from the NFL. First round pick back in 2018, started all 96 games in which he played over the past 7 years. Did have some injuries, as most guys will get playing that position in that long. Four-time Pro Bowler, three-time and second-team All-Pro. So, Jensen, it's obviously news. How big of news, or could it be noise and say, you know what, we got a second-rounder who's going to step in and fill Frank's shoes?
Oh, I mean, that's always the unknown, right, is a rookie coming into, if not the second most important position on the offense, as important one to call out, you know, the changes in coverage and the schemes and really be able to direct the protections as well. And I know you've got a great resource there and our colleague here at the network and Jeff Schwartz, who, who knows all about that. To me, it really is a continuity idea of, Ragnow had everyone ready to go where they were supposed to be, and that was as big a reason why Jared Goff had the season that he did, and there wasn't as much to worry about with him. Because once he kind of has to move around the pocket, you know, and maybe scramble a little bit, that's where things kind of come undone. I'm with Matt Eumanns. I do think there's regression here, even with all the offensive weaponry. If you do start a rookie there, wow, what immense pressure, and in arguably the most competitive division in football headed into this year.
Here's what's interesting, because centers don't move numbers, right? They're just not going to move a number. Although we have seen a numbers move on the Lions, because when these numbers started to come out a couple months ago on divisional prices, they're about plus $1.30. They're up to a plus $1.40. I know it's only 10 cents. And again, maybe it's not just the Frank Ragnow move and that news, but it's maybe in conjunction with the coordinators. Then you do lose a center. You do get a little bit older, certainly at the quarterback position, and your stud running backs are not as young as they once were. They're still young enough, and Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, that's for sure. Amon-Ra St. Brown is still a very skilled player on the outside. Sam Laporta, you've got a stud at tight end. I mean, you've got weapons. You're going to get back Hutch on the other side. But when I see that number start to tick up, my only caution would be, again, remember the Bills last year. Everybody was waiting for the Bills to take that big step back. And they were the Buffalo Bills were plus $2 to win the AFC East this time last year. And they just ran away with it. I just wonder, Jensen, at the end of the year, we're going to go, yeah, Detroit at plus money, at plus $1.40, what were we thinking in not grabbing that number? Because I'm with you. I think most people believe it's not only a two-horse race with Green Bay. You can make the case if the Bears take a big jump, and we saw how good the Vikings were a year ago, that this is a four-team race in the North.
Yeah, and I mean, just the win total alone for each team of the NFC North, Dave, every team with a chance for the over to be over 500. I mean, if that doesn't tell you, you know, how ridiculous that could be. And from the betting favorite right now of plus $1.40 for the Lions to the Bears at plus 425, I mean, there's not a lot of daylight right there. So, you know, to me, I think you go outside of that and just using the Lions as an idea here.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that they come back and they are, we asked this question in the AFC, right? What would it take to get the one seed? Would it be 13 wins? Would it be maybe 14? Just kind of knowing, yeah, there's a lot of teams that could be challenging for that this year. If you're looking at the NFC, what does it take to get up there? And if you believe it's 12, 13 wins, then why not, you know, kind of go for an alternate win total there instead of, you know, just taking them to win the division? I think that to me would be maybe a bit more profitable, just knowing who they've got to outrun and how good they would have to be again.
Just imagine Minnesota won 14 games a year ago and did not get the number one seed. That's how it's almost quietly great the Lions were at 15-2 a year ago. And then that win total set down to 10.5 this year. So the marketplace at least is expecting some sort of regression. That's a lot of regression to hit that under, though, if you really think they're going to go from 15 to 10 wins this year. Could happen. It's not my team. It's not your team. It's America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. And I get it, Jensen. They're polarizing, right? Talk about the owner. We talk about Jarrah a lot. Do we talk about the head coach? Brian Schottenheimer, first-year head coach down there in Big D. Had the chance to catch up with Jeff Schwartz yesterday on GM Shuffle, wherever you get your podcast, check it out. And we talked about that dichotomy of going from being friends with Dak Prescott as a guy, as an assistant on the roster under Mike McCarthy. But with Big Mike gone, Brian is now your boss. Let's talk and hear from Jeff about how that might shift the way Dak and Brian Schottenheimer operate.
That's is one thing I was concerned about, hearing the reports of like, he's a player's coach and we elevate the player's coach. So, and that now you go from having to be a friend to basically a boss, right? Like the relationship changes and how are players going to take it out? The players are professionals and their adults will probably be fine with it. But, you know, can you go from the fun loving coach to being the disciplinarian? Now his style might not be as a coach to be disciplinary. There's other people with staff, you might entrust that to a defensive coach or an offensive assistant to be the red ass coach, right? Like you need some of that on your team, I feel like. So it's a curious, right? It's curious because like, what if things go poorly and you're the player's coach? Are you gonna really be able to crack the whip down on these guys and make sure that you know they follow you and whatnot?
And that's the interesting part. I wonder, did you ever have that with maybe a pitching coach who's behind the scenes a little bit more? And obviously, pitching coaches are still in the public eye, but then you become a manager, and it changes that dynamic. And that's going to happen this year for Brian Schottenheimer and Dak Prescott. How do you evaluate that in those changing roles?
Well, you know, for players that have a positional coach in that relationship early, it does give you kind of a leg up once the coach gets to, you know, the CEO position of head coach. So, you know, that previous relationship, you know, allows you maybe a bit more of leverage if things are needed to be discussed or concepts are needed to be brought forward. So, hey, you know, we know that the spotlight will be on Dallas. I mean, the beginning of that schedule, Dave, I know we've talked about it a little bit. You get the two primetime games, of course, a season opener, but it's the two division games to me, right? And you know this as well as anybody. No repeat winner in the East for that length of time that's happened. But I think for them, it's more of reaffirming like, hey, this is different when you got to do all the other responsibilities of a head coach that Brian Schottenheimer is going to have. And that takes away from timing for scheming and just worrying about one element of the organization. So I think that's the thing I look for early is, again, this continuity thing that we bring up a lot. What does it look like week in and week out? What is the flow? What is the tempo? And, you know, what's the confidence level of this group knowing that he's your head man?
7-point underdogs. That number has not moved yet. Still 46.5. That's the September 4th game, Thursday night to begin the season in the city of brotherly shove. Welcome to the NFL, Brian Schottenheimer. All you get is the reigning defendings on ring night in Philadelphia. I mean, if that's not an eye-opening way to begin your first stint as a head coach in the NFL, you're no settling in process here, Brian. You're going to hit the ground running with the whole world watching on that September 4th. I will say this, I mentioned this months ago here, the 7.5 win total, I really like the over on that. Now, people have been listening because that juice is starting to get out of hand. It's up to $1.50. I saw up to $1.60 in the overs in some spots. All I would say is this, and you might not get a massive discount, but if you do believe the Cowboys are going to lose week one to Philadelphia and you've got patience in the betting market, just wait. Just wait. And if it doesn't look particularly good in week one, that adjusted, they're going to adjust those win totals right away. So if you don't like the Cowboys week one, I might not be one of those people, Jensen. But if you don't like them week one and you really give them zero shot to win that game, then I would suggest you wait and bet an adjusted win total on the Cowboys and see if that comes down a little bit. Look, I've said it to you. I've said it to Jeff and others. If Brian Schottenheimer is half as good as his dad was as a head coach in the NFL, Cowboys are going to be just fine. But that is a big step, and I'm not one of those guys that loves to hear player, coach, do whatever. Dude, you got to be the boss. You have to be the boss. That's the job. Are you ready for the job? We'll find out. But that is the job, and they want you to be a leader of other men in that locker room. That's the way it goes. When we come back, JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, talking NBA Finals next here. It's VSiN by the Books.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back. VSiN by the Books here on this Tuesday edition. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis coming at you here. Always love catching up with our guy, JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel. Give him a follow on X at MeJVT. Does a great job here in the network. And, of course, catch him on Money Moves with Stormy weekdays here in the network. Joins us here in the Progressive Guest Line. Jonathan, because you're kind of our resident NBA guy, right? Do you look ahead to Thursday like, man, this is the crescendo, this is what we've all been waiting for, the NBA final? Or do you go, man, OKC minus $7 betting favorite, this thing's over before it begins?
No, I mean, I'm excited for it. I always like these types of matchups, right? This is best offense versus best defense. And those types of things are always fun to watch. Like, who is going to win out? Now, generally, just in sports, we have seen that the best offense, best defense matchup tends to go to the defense at times. You know, we can look back at many famous matchups in football, basketball, and others that go in that direction. But no, I'm very excited. Like, I enjoy the intricacies of basketball. I enjoy lineup changes. I enjoy coverages. I enjoy seeing how these teams attack each other. So I'm looking forward to it. And look, I do think, like, from just the series price perspective, guys, it's not like a massive overshoot, but I do think some of the prices we're seeing, specifically those like minus 700s, that is a big red sign that says we just don't want your Thunder money, right? Like, we're shading this a little bit higher because we don't want to take on all of this stuff. And then, of course, the other markets, same thing. We don't want to build up all this Thunder liability in a series we think could be short. So we're going to just beef this thing up and hope to deter some of that outside of some of the sharper folks who can, you know, lay 700 or whatever it is, or the equivalent price to win some money. I think that's really what we're seeing. So I think there's a better shot than the market's giving Indiana that this could be a somewhat competitive series. But no, I'm very excited for this.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see it too, JBT, and what the dynamic is. I mean, it feels like the Pacers have been on house money here for a couple of rounds, but they also in themselves have probably been like, this is us against the world, because no one thought we would get here outside of this group. Some series props for you. I know you've targeted some series leaders. What do you have for us?
So one of the things that I think is going to be really interesting in this series, because I fully believe, and I think we all should at this point right now, Jensen, that the Thunder's defense is incredible. It is the best we've seen in a very long time. And so I think they're going to have some success. So how do you attack this in different ways? So we have a series assists leader market that I think is a little mispriced. Tyrese Haliburton in some spots is minus 900 to lead the series in assists. And I understand he should be the odds on favorite. We understand how good he is. He's a great facilitator. But guys, I don't know if the assist opportunities are going to be there for him. I think the Thunder are going to be more than willing and more than comfortable to stay at home with their guys while throwing whoever, right? Lu Dort, Jalen Williams, even Shea at times, on Tyrese Haliburton and feel comfortable that they're going to win that matchup more often than not, or live with what the result is going to be. And so I think those assist opportunities are going to be severely cut into. Again, I think he deserves to be favored. I just don't think he deserves to be favored to this degree. So look, there's only really two options to play in some of these spots, but Shea Gilgeous-Alexander at 5-1 to lead the series in assists, as well as a little bit on Jalen Williams at 66-1 to lead the series in assists. Shea, it's obvious, right? He's going to have the ball in his hands. He's going to be able to kick it out. The assist opportunity is going to be there. He is the team's leading assister. But for Jalen Williams, guys, if you're talking about pure assist rate, how often does he assist on made field goals when he's on the floor? He is the best player on this Thunder team. Nearly a quarter of the assists when he was on the floor were courtesy of Jalen Williams. He's a pretty good passer. So given the fact that I think this series market is a little overpriced, and I think that there's some value, I put a little bit on Shea to lead the series in assists, as well as Jalen Williams at 66-1.
All right, Jonathan, you mentioned before we get to some of your other props that you're really going to get in the weeds as kind of a basketball nerd to see how the adjustments go, right? I don't think people have talked a lot about Rick Carlisle and Mark Daigneault. Who's got the advantage from the head coaching perspective here? Is it as simple as Carlisle's been there, done that, and has won a ring, and Mark's trying to do something he hasn't done before? Is it a decided advantage to Carlisle?
I think it's fair to say that. I think Daigneault's great, but I think there is something to be said, Dave, of just being there or doing that. I think what this run for Indiana has been, and rightfully so, we focus a lot on the players and their performances. This has been a masterclass for Rick Carlisle, I think, throughout this entire postseason with the way that he has handled this, his rotations, the way he's attacked guys, altered game plans. And I think we have seen, while I believe Daigneault is very good, I believe, was it game one against the Denver Nuggets where you see those little things, right? You know, fouling way too early when you're up by three, fouling when Nikola Jokic is on the bench in clutch time so you can let him get back into the game, things like that. I think Daigneault's very good. And if, like, we're grading these guys, like, Carlisle's been an A+. I think Daigneault's been like an A-. But I do think Carlisle deserves a little bit more respect when it comes to that dynamic, Dave, because I do think he has been there. He has done that. We have such a larger sample size of him in this postseason and in other postseasons being a very, very good coach. And Daigneault, we're still seeing it at this point right now. So I don't think there's really any question that Carlisle would have an edge here in terms of what they're doing schematically.
JBT, we have tried to make money off of bad teams, and I think you're going back to the well tonight on the diamond, buddy. What do you have for us with the Colorado Rockies?
Man, so I heard you guys talk about this the other day, or I think it was today actually too, when you guys were discussing like the prices and trying to induce some bets for the Colorado Rockies. And I thought Chris Bennett over at Circa had a really good interview with Mitch and Paul when you're talking about like there was an article out there like, man, the Rockies, the bookmaker's worst nightmare. No, like you can start to ratchet these prices up and make the Rockies attractive on the line. And I think we're seeing that in this series against the Marlins. I was on the Rockies yesterday, both team total and money line, and I'm going to go again here today. I'm sorry, but the Marlins, yesterday they were $2 favorites at close, guys. Like, that's absolutely insane for where this Marlins team is at. And again here today, if I were to just remove the team labels and just tell you, hey, there's a starter that over his last six starts has an ERA over 10, a fielding independent that's nearly six, and by the way, you got to lay $1.70 with him today. Like, no, no, thank you. And that is Sandy Alcantara. He has not pitched particularly well. Obviously, he's coming off of this injury. The fastball velo is still there, but he just doesn't have it. And on the other end, look, on the surface, Chase Dolander is not great. He is their top prospect. But his last two starts before he went on the IL, guys, with some forearm tightness, he started to figure some things out a little bit. 2.53 ERA against Texas and Arizona, both on the road. Struck out 31% of the hitters that he faced in those two starts. He's got some good stuff. I just feel like from a probability standpoint, we are just too high again. And I will take it on the chin one last time if it happens. Give me the Rockies here today once more. I think if you're getting that plus 160 that is available out there, that's a bet worth making. We're starting to see some resistance too in the market this morning. I just think it's too high for Miami, and I will try it one last time.
And again, not only to win, but obviously you got to score some runs in that process. They were down 4-1 yesterday, yeah, to Miami. I missed the live number on that. I would have loved to have seen it. But you think they'll score some runs again? Maybe that offense is contagious after rallying to get six yesterday in the win.
Yeah, so I went over team total as well, over 3.5 at minus 110. I think it's a fair number to get over here. Yeah, again, yesterday, like the Rockies showed they're capable of doing it against bad pitching. And I think they're going to be able to do it again here. And, you know, it's funny because I had somebody, and I think this was like in jest or whatever it was, but, you know, the Marlins yesterday leave 9 guys on and they go 3-for-16 with runners in scoring position.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what bad teams do, yep, right? Like, but that's like, this is what bad teams do. Like, this is a bad team. So, yeah, I do think that the Rockies can take advantage of Alcantara here, score early and get at least to 4 runs, Dave. I think that's a fair ask of them. So team total over 3.5 minus 110.
JVT was in Athens over the weekend doing the regional there for Georgia. And I know we love to do it here on the network for March Madness. So we get the equivalent of some June Madness with all the regionals. Remind me, it's our first time going out to Omaha respectively next week. What are you most excited for?
Ooh, I think there's a lot. So I've been trying to watch a little bit more of these baseball games, and like the volatility at times. Like, so for example, you know, we talk about Dave mentioned a team being down. LSU down yesterday, 5-1 at one point to Little Rock. Yeah, you know, like 2.5 in game, 2.5 on the run line in game, and they end up still getting there. Like, these games are great. They're so volatile. They're going to be a ton of fun. But I'm just really interested. Like Jensen, this is one of those things where you always hear about how intense it is, how fun it is. Like, these are, look, like, we'll be honest, if you're following and traveling for college baseball, you're a hardcore fan. So to be around something like that, I think is going to be absolutely tremendous. And you can speak to this a little bit better than I, Jensen, but this seems like pure madness, right? Like, when you have these nationally seeded teams going down where the SEC maybe doesn't look as tough as most of us expected, if we're going to get this chaos in these super regionals and get some teams we didn't expect onto the College World Series, we can get some madness to start our day out there on Friday when we're going to be out there. So I'm very excited for that, just to be in the environment, and maybe not. Looking forward to taking Jello shots and having drinks with some of the locals will be a ton of fun as well.
That's exactly what my next question was, because I've asked Jensen, like, what's your rules of engagement for you and Stormy on Money Moves? Does it have to be post show, or could you get, you know, I don't know, maybe roll the dice a little bit during a show?
I mean, I think so. There's a dirty secret that FCC violations only occur if they're reported. So as long as there's not some pansies out there who are going to report us for potentially doing it, I mean, I think we can get away for doing it throughout the program.
Yeah, it's a Jello shot, right? It's harmless.
No. Come on now.
By the way, reminder, we're going to be out there as a network here. That's June 12th through the 14th there for the College World Series. And again, catch JVT, Stormy on Money Moves. Follow the money with Mitch and Paulie and the guys as well. So, Jonathan, get ready for that trip. I can't wait to see and hear the stories from you and Jensen out there at Omaha for that one. And again, that's coming up here in short order, gentlemen. But we are getting ready for the NBA Finals. Very quickly, JVT, on the way out, again, you think maybe can we see the series extended to 6 games? Is that too much of an ask?
I bet gentlemen sweep, like, exact. So Thunder go up 3-0, lose game 4, win in game 5. So if you go like that exact, that's like plus 625. That's how I bet it. So I'd lean under 5.5.
Good haircut. Can't wait to hear you and Stormy today when you come in studio later on today. Appreciate you, JVT. As always, give a follow to me, JVT. Back with our best bets. It's next year. Beeson by the Books.
By the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here with you. Great conversation with Jonathan Von Tobel in the last segment. as well. We always appreciate people that reach out to us during the show. We got a nice tweet from Jared Eisenlohr, who says, at us here, that maybe the Lions that move for, we're talking a lot about Frank Ragnow, who's now retired as the center, former center now of the Detroit Lions. What do you do that maybe the rookie Glasgow that they drafted in the second round, that they move him, that they move the veteran Glasnow rather to center, and then put the rookie Rutledge over there at guard. And that would seem to make some sense. I mean, Jensen, it's not necessarily always as easy as moving guys inside and, you know, swapping out veterans here and there. But if you can get the veteran here in Glasgow to be able to play center, that would make some sense to give Rutledge a little bit of, I guess, kind of welcome to the NFL. We can help you out a little bit more guard than making all the calls that you might have to make as a center.
Yeah, and I love that they're both getting the center reps. And why wouldn't you, right? You want, and just for the mere fact that we know injuries happen all the time. Linemen get stepped on. You know, you get rolled over on. So you need the backup anyway. That's, again, goes back to our earlier conversation and the question you asked me about futures is, you know, again, these are great storylines and positional ideas to follow, because then you get into week one and then, you know, the dress rehearsal there in week two,
right?
And, you know, just understanding where that flow and that development and that synergy is with the offensive line. So this is great information to have. And it's something to follow as you get into, you know, the camps and then ultimately into those preseason games.
It sounds like they're going to try to figure out if they have two options to replace Frank at center here. So we'll see what the Lions do. But that's a massive move here in June to chart before you get to those preseasons here. Who's playing center for the Lions? And some of those small things that people don't look at, we're always going to talk about the quarterbacks and everything else. Sometimes these moves could affect things in a big, big way. We're going to have Wednesdays with Wes tomorrow, as we always do here on VSiN by the Books. But I did want to just take a cursory look here. This is the Canadian Open. We're talking a lot about the U.S. Open, which is obviously next week at Oakmont, as we get to the third major of the year in golf. But this week, Rory McIlroy will be playing north of the border, and he is a massive favorite in this. Look at the numbers here, Jensen. This is Scotty to the rest of the field now. And what's interesting here is Rory at plus 450 to win this event. The next betting choice is the big Swede, Ludvig Åberg, who's not played great golf, if we're being blunt about that. He did play very well in the final round at Jack's Place, went very low. So something to keep in mind there, that sometimes when these guys find it, it gets them right back into that mode. So 14-1 for Ludvig is the second betting choice. Then you see the Canadian, Corey Connors, and I can't wait to pick Wes's brain about this as well. Nick Taylor, it might be the most famous win, to break the streak of, we're talking about Canadians winning the Stanley Cup. He won this a couple years ago north of the border, and you would the logo now for the event is Nick Taylor and his winning putt that he had, about a 70-footer, to beat, ironically, Tommy Fleetwood. So you look at some of the names that are on here. Remember, some guys are not going to play this because next week is the U.S. Open. The pressure of winning that tournament, I wonder if that's going to affect Corey Connors. He's the third betting choice at 20-1. Shane Lowry, Northern Ireland there, at 22-1. Taylor Pendrith, another Canadian to keep an eye on, at 28-1. So just some early looks here on a Tuesday before we get to that conversation with Wednesday, of course, with Wes Reynolds. Let's get to our best bets. They are brought to us by GBank, the official bank of VSiN. And some of those in Major League Baseball, we just had JVT on. He's going to go back to the well with the Rockies 2 days in a row. It would be a winning streak if you win two in a row, Jensen. What do you make of that play by JVT?
Hey, teach their own, man. I don't know. You know what to make of both these teams day in and day out, but hey, at least the Rockies get to double digits in wins before the All-Star break. Good job out of them. I guess overall, Dave, if I'm looking at it again, truly on Tuesdays, it's mostly a wait and see for me, just for lineups. We do have a couple of teams waiting to announce starters here as of almost the 10 o'clock Eastern hour. So a couple of leans for me. I mentioned it to Matty Humans earlier in the show. I do like going back to the under in that Tigers and White Sox under 8.5. Again, no official plays here, just some leans for you, some ideas. Shane Smith, who's actually pitched the ball pretty well for the White Sox, is the scheduled starter for Chicago. Detroit yet to announce a starter. Do like the over in Twins Athletics, over the 10 right there. If you get a 10 flat, that'd be good. Pablo Lopez going to get the ball for Minnesota. No starter yet for Mark Kotze in the Athletics. Interesting one for you. And again, back to the National League East. The Braves, you know, going to have to make some hay. We talked about it a little bit. Like, man, is it too far out now to be able to try and come back there in the National League East? Intriguing matchup for two teams that really kind of need to get going. So let's start with the Braves here. Spencer Strider going to be on the hill against Arizona. I was leaning towards the run line here for the Braves, plus $1.42. Zach Gallen is going for the Diamondbacks. It has been really an up and down campaign for him, Dave, and really without certainty yet on Corbin Burns, if he will miss time, and if so, how much time, you know, at the minimum, you know, is it an IL stint, maximum obviously would be a season ending injury. You know, Arizona was a team you and I kind of talked about as targeting, like, you know what, that they're sneaky good, man. Yep. But they have had some serious ups and downs already, and the injury bug could derail them. But that a game too. Very intrigued to watch there at Truist Park tonight.
Yeah, three games under 500 now for the D-backs here after that great start to the season here. So they've really, they're on the skids here. And the Braves are four games under 500 now, 27-31. So two teams kind of that Spider-Man gift looking at each other right now with the Braves and the D-backs. And I'll say this too, Jensen. Yesterday, the Braves were idle. Mets played. They win last night in L.A. The Braves went from 11-1 to 12-1 overnight. That's a full dollar move for a team that didn't play. So it's starting to show you, at least in the odds market, it's starting to get late for the ATL. So look, I'm not going to get mad at you if you want to take a shot at 12-1 right now on the Braves. It's the best number you're going to get in the last couple weeks, that's for sure. But remember, they're 10 games out of first place. And technically, Jensen, they're in fourth place in the NL East. The Nationals actually are a half game ahead of the Braves right now. So you got three teams you got to hop in front of here. Again, half game behind the Nationals, and you're 8.5 back of the Phillies and 10 back of the Mets. Does it get to that point at 12-1 that's enticing, or does that feel like fool's gold?
Again, same exercise here that we did with the Royals.
Look to the LCS.
The American League Central. Yep. Yeah, I just, again, you get kind of two bites at the apple there, where, you know, you get into the postseason, you have an opportunity at least to hedge. If they are going to be in the wild card round by not winning the division, you know, then yeah, that's, you know, teach their own on how you want to monetize potentially that ticket. But if they do find a way back, then you have a 15-1 in pocket, knowing they will host a playoff series as a division winner, whether that is the wild card round or if they just go on a big time run and get a first round bye. So I think just knowing their pedigree, yes, I'd rather have the National League price. Man, they got to get going.
Yeah.
You know, you're 58 games in here. We're third of the season already down, so they got to make some hay.
And you've got an official play in pocket. Do you have the fever tonight in the WNBA?
I locked this in yesterday. VSiN Pro subscribers, you have the fever at -4.5. It's up to 5 at certain spots. So, hey, I know no Caitlin Clark, but sometimes you just got to look at where the data is and say, you know what? I kind of like it. Circa, I believe, is still at 4.5. So if you're DraftKings better, you've already gotten at least a half point there of some line value. So let's see it done. I love points. Let's blow them out, Fever. Come on.
Come on. You're at home. Even though you don't have Caitlin, she'll be there still watching. You want to put on a good show for the hometown faithful. So laying the 4.5 tonight here against Washington. We've got a $500 trifecta right now from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you got to do is open up a GBank Visa signature credit card in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. Then you're going to get a $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa signature credit card. First Bet's going to give you a $100 deposit match. VSiN will complete the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through August 31st. That's a $200 value. That's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. So head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This is a one-time promotion limited to customers opening up a new account. In response to this offer, it will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. So apply today. Terms and conditions do apply. Jensen, we'll get to some official picks tomorrow as we will begin the Stanley Cup Finals tomorrow night. And then Thursday, are you changing any opinions so far here on the way out on that Pacers and Thunder series?
I don't think so. I'm with JVT. I know that the gentleman sweep is out there, but I just got a feeling that Indiana's been defying expectations all postseason long. Why not one more round?
Kind of like it as well. Stay tuned, of course, coming up next. It's a numbers game, and we've got Matt Brown and Kelly Bidlin. That is next here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.